Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Aidan Turner on Stardish Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Bob Guinea, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. Let's dish, baby!
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Stardish Radio on the Blog Talk Network. Today is April 30th, 2010. I'm your host, Joanne. Calling number is 347-945-5423. I'm chatting with some guests in the chat room. I have yet to have my guest on the phone. All of my regular listeners, you all know the drill. You definitely know the drill. Sometimes stuff happens on live radio. I'm just hoping that Ricky got my message and he will call in. The way that this was set up was I was supposed to call him and conference him into the switchboard, which I tried to do, and I'm getting a voicemail. So I left him a message to call me back. So just bear with me. And you all know that when this kind of stuff happens, I feel very bad because I always feel like I'm disappointing you guys, and I don't like to do that. But in the event, I put some interesting links in the chat room. I want you guys to check out. There's an awesome colorgenics test that was created through the Golden Clinic, which was founded by Ricky Paul's dad. So what I have to say is that it is eerily accurate and scary. So I would love for you guys to go check it out and take the test and tell me what you think. It's pretty amazing because mine was spot on. I mean, I couldn't dispute anything that it did not say, that it said, in this little quiz. So if you scroll up to the chat, the top of the chat is where I posted the links. I might have to post them again if you can't reach them. Let me know if you can't. I will post them again. I'm going to put you guys on hold for a second, and I'll be right back.
Hey everybody, this is Brandon Barash, and thank you for listening to Stardish Radio. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Can you all hear me?
Son of a bitch.
Hi, everyone. I'm so sorry. I've had such a horrific technical difficulty with this stupid switchboard, so please forgive me, especially to my guest. I'm just jumping right into this. He bounced around the bumpy landscape of primetime television and film for well over a decade, but it wasn't until he landed the plum role of Dean Frame on Another World that he became an overnight sensation, 12 years in the making. It would be another 8 years before he would find his signature star-making part, that of quirky cop Gus on Guiding Light, for which he was nominated for a pair of Emmy Awards. And he has not looked back since. He's just about to celebrate his second anniversary playing the role of Dr. Jake Martin on All My Children. And this Sunday night, he begins exploring another of his deeply held passions, by taking an extremely personal journey inspired by his father as the host of the new TLC series, Seeing vs. Believing, which aims to peel back the curtain on the unexplainable mysteries that surround us. And he has come by the show tonight to discuss all of this and more. So please give a warm Star Dish welcome to our fabulous, dynamic guest, Ricky Paul Golden. Ricky,
good evening.
I am so daggone sorry.
Oh, no. Cool. It's I don't even understand how you patch in phones and stuff like that. So I'm not that technically savvy.
Can I really even tell you that when I hung up with you and tried to see what the problem was with the switchboard, my own cell phone number was calling me back. So I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah.
My cell phone
thing.
Number was calling me. So I don't know. You're channeling something here, buddy boy. I don't know what it is.
You're going to have to look into that.
Well, nonetheless, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm so glad you're able to make it. Let's jump into this. Paranormal activity, unfinished business, the undead. These are all basic terms that when most people hear them, they kind of dismiss it as being utterly ridiculous and just not possible without any kind of research. It's just, you know, because that's what most of society believes. Now, your dad was a believer, so tell us how he influenced this labor of love for you.
Well, he wasn't just a believer. He was one of the very special people on this planet. He was a world-renowned hypnotist.
Mm-hmm.
He helped hundreds of thousands of people on this planet while he was here with everything, with all kinds of psychoses that they had, or drinking or smoking or, you know, speech impediments and all kinds of curses that people had. He was able to shut them down, open up their mind, and climb inside and fix people. And he could do it on a massive scale as well. He went around the world, circumnavigated the globe several dozen times, sold out some of the biggest arenas, did this for heads of state and kings, and he really kind of walked among the spirit world too. He was a very interesting fellow, and something that my little sister and I both came across when he did pass, were his journals and a book that he wrote. He'd written several other books that were published and whatnot, but 16,000 hours of audio tape. He had one of the greatest voices, by the way. Just on how he did things and what he believed in, and then I even have things of his that he created, like subliminal tapes that he said he could play in office buildings and stop in, 30 floor skyscraper. He could stop everybody in that building from smoking.
Really?
Yeah. He actually came
to
Guiding Light one time and hypnotized my entire cast and crew to stop smoking. And
really?
It worked. Fact of the matter is, with anything like that, you need to follow up. Just like, repetition is the mother of learning, as they say. So naturally, you'd want to follow up. But a lot of people in that building didn't smoke after that. And I was one of them.
So. That's fabulous. I mean, I was doing some reading on your dad, and and for everyone in the chat room, I put in a few websites that I really want you guys to check out, which is paulgolden.com, which is the clinic that your sister now runs in Ireland. And I also toyed with the Collagenics test.
Oh, yeah? Did you take the test?
Certainly did. And, oh, my God, can I just tell you, it was so accurate that I cried.
For people that don't know what that is, my father, for 35 years, when patients would leave him, he'd have them fill out a color chart. And they were sort of benign colors, but the order in which you picked it to the one that you liked the best to the one that you didn't, that was your least favorite, my father was able to sort of be a Geiger counter for human emotion. And so he now, he's left this behind him, this a computer program that by punching in your colors randomly, it will tell you where you're at. And it changes from day, it changes from, month to month, of course, just like we all, we all change. But to answer your question, seeing versus believing, which is on Sunday night at 8 o'clock on TLC, was inspired by real life experiences and by the real life and times of my father, Paul Golden. And he did ask me to do this before he passed away. It was one of his final wishes to go in and show people with special gifts to the world. That's what he asked me to do, and I didn't really quite know how I would fulfill this for him, and it's turned into this. It's turned into seeing versus believing, which is exactly what I'm doing. I'm going across the country, and I'm bringing along a buddy of mine who's a great guy, but he's the biggest skeptic in the world. And we are going to show the world people who are claiming to be or have special gifts, paranormal talents or supernatural talents or abilities, and we will show them to the world. And by the way, when we come back from commercial break, we're going to rip it all apart with whatever experts we need to bring in from wherever, anywhere in the world, and we start that off this Sunday night.
Well, let me ask you, as far as like the preparation for the show, with shows out there now like Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel, for example, how difficult of an idea was this to sell to TLC? Like, so what sets your show apart from the rest of these types of shows?
I love those shows. Ghost Hunters doesn't really find any much, but I love it. I mean, I love those shows. I love Paranormal State. I love Psychic Kids. I get it. I enjoy them. This show is not going to be. We're going to keep the cameras rolling on our show, and I'm not. My job is not just to make you believe, because I'm giving you. I'm always going to give you. We as a team are giving you a choice to make at home. Some things will be overwhelmingly in one direction or the other, just because of what we are all witnessing together. And I believe that this is the reason why I think this show sold, and the reason why it's happening is because it has compassion, it has heart, and there's realism here. It's just really important to me. The reason that I'm a believer is because I witness things myself. And I mean, if you're going to have a debate and the other side's going to have a rebuttal, you need to be able to show evidence and proof. I'm not just out to show the world that, you know, everybody should believe, because I'm not stupid. I'm a realist. I want to see it for myself as well.
Right.
There's a lot of things that I don't believe, you know, and there's a lot of people and with their claims that are going to think are, you know, bupkis they're bunk and they're rubbish. And that's going to be fun to find out too, but we will swiftly and quickly move on looking for the real deal. You know, originally we were going to put up $1 million in cash to anybody that could prove that they had some sort of special gift beyond a shadow of a doubt. But the truth is, right at the last minute, we took the money component out, not because we couldn't get a network to raise the money. That wasn't the problem. As you can see on television, everybody's, you know, they can do it if they want to, because we wanted to make it about people, and we didn't want to make it a big greed fest or people just wanting 15 minutes of fame.
Right.
And
I can only imagine what would crawl out of the woodwork with that.
Yeah, so that didn't just seem that it wasn't necessary. This is more a show that has heart, and I really feel like I'm getting closer to my dad, closer to him in death than we actually might have been in life, like a lot of fathers and sons.
Okay. Well, now how explain to me and the rest of us the locations. How are the locations decided? Now, are people coming to you? Are you picking locations? Are they telling you of certain things and you're just going to explore them?
Well, you know, first and foremost, as a production company, we are looking and weighing things, you know, ourselves, and we have a department that looks at that and what is compelling and what more than anything seems real. And if it's not a person, it's a place. You know, by the way, it's almost like if it's a person, place, or a thing. If it's a place, we want to see some history. If it's something that's freaked a town out, or something that's been going on in Brazil or Kansas, that's really compelling and it's documented. Then we start to get excited. The funny thing is that since Seeing versus Believing has been out there now. The word is getting out. People have been writing into us in droves and sending in all kinds of cool stuff. It's almost like 6 degrees. Everybody's got somebody in their life or family that's had an experience. And so they're writing to us wishing and hoping that we'll come and investigate it. I got to tell you, those things to me will go to the top of the pot.
Okay. Now, tell everybody about the scar on your face and how that happened.
It's kind of proof. The proof is in the pudding. You know, one of the segments that we did on the show was about a cursed piece of land in the Midwest. And we were warned not to go there. And, of course, we just went to the town and we started knocking on doors and going to coffee shops and what have you, diners and libraries and just the regular Joe next door to get the story on this property. And it was unanimous. Everybody in this town is freaked out about this piece of land and called Hell's Half Acre. And, you know, it's like anything else. You don't go up there and all of a sudden just walk into the Bermuda Triangle or something. You go up there and things seem apropos in the beginning. They seem... they're not that scary or whatever. And as time starts going by, you start getting deeper and deeper into this feeling than you were up there. There was other things that we didn't even put on camera was people in the crew getting dizzy. And everybody in the town was freaked out, but one person did agree to take us up there. The Native American Indians around there, however, would not go near it, would not meet us there on the location. They said they wouldn't even speak those words across their lips. They never let their kids go there. All that kind of stuff. Now, I'm sorry, but I always have felt like the American Indians, obviously very spiritual, but always had a handle on that a lot more than me, who's a regular person. So, however, being a believer or not, or Jeff Gertman not being a believer, we went and trampled all over this place for 3 days and nights, and we were warned, and I walked out of that place with 21 stitches in my face, and 5 stitches internally in my mouth, because of what happened up there, which is still unexplainable. And all I can tell you, even on off camera, when I was in the emergency room and Gertman, my partner, was doing the last interview with the American Indian, he said, you know, you go up there a fourth time and this thing will follow you home. So, and I've said this story before, but Jeff goes, well, you know, Ricky got hurt. He's getting stitched up, but nothing happened to me. And the American Indian said, well, nothing yet. Now, I don't care if you're a believer or a skeptic or if you're whatever you are, that starts happening. Why even go there? Why spend time there? Why not just hightail it out of there? And I bet you 99 out of 100 people would just go, you know, screw this, I'm out. And that's exactly what happened. This place is wrong. We will never be going back there. I don't care if there's a TV show or I'm talking to you on the radio or anything, you know, for purposes of this show, I will never go back to that place. And our hearts were pounding. My crew wanted to split. Our time codes got all messed up. That's the way you edit the show. It's a nightmare if your time codes are messed up. Ours were just out the window, ruined. And so it took hours and hours, you know, upon hours, where it normally wouldn't have, to be able to put that segment of the show together. And it's all because of something crazy going on.
What was it that actually cut your face?
You're going to have to watch the show, but
we're going to see that. Okay.
Oh, it's cool. And you're going to see it, but you know what? It's hard to see. It's very real. You see, I was handycam documenting it at the time, and what you don't see, and you can maybe if you listen to this now with me and you watch the show on Sunday night, we were right next to each other, and we were maybe 5 or 6 feet apart. These caves go forever. And by this time, we're in the cave. It's like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Even though when we first arrived, it was 11:36, I believe. I just can't forget remembering that number. In any case, all of a sudden, we couldn't hear each other's voices. It was like something stepped between us. And I'm down at this cave. I've only got this small light from my camera at this point, and I see a heap on the ground, and it looks like to me it's moving. And there's no doubt that it was moving because this thing ripped at me, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was messed up because it's, you know, I flew back to California next day and had to tape the other show that I'm on with an ice pack on my face and say that I tripped over, you know, my son Trevor's toy train or whatever.
Wow.
Out of my mouth, you know. But we were still terrified.
That's crazy.
You know what's funny? Jeff, the skeptic, ran out of there like a little girl. And I just want to say, he's one of my best friends, so I can say that. However, 2 days, you know, a month later when we're doing our testimonials, he's right back to, you know, like, well, I don't, you know, Ricky hurt himself. And I don't know, not meaning like I cut my face. I mean, I cut my face, but maybe he tripped. The guy was right next to me, and by the way, leaving me behind. Okay.
Oh my God.
So, listen, we all have friends like this. We all
have friends
like this. That's why he's perfect for this show. So.
Right. Okay. Well, I was going to ask you about him, being that he is the skeptic. Now, you have a few shows under your belt, so he. And he's witnessed some things. So is he still as skeptical? Does he kind of how does he rationalize some of the events that you go through? I mean,
yeah, he was born skeptical. Okay, and I don't know. Like I've said this before, but I don't know who is an older soul or a younger soul. I've got my opinion on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I can learn a lot through Jeff's eyes as well, and I think it's and vice versa is you know goes. It goes the same for him.
Right.
But if you've got a believer, you can't not have the skeptic. And if you've got a skeptic in an adventure like this, you can't not have the believer.
Oh, absolutely.
But here's the thing. He's a real person. Jeff Gertman is not a television personality. He's not, you know, he's not an actor. And I say this because I'm fully on, you know, I'm fully, it's like full disclosure here. Like my mom said to me, she saw the show already, was sent her a copy of the show. She's my biggest critic. She's like, and this is the first time I'm really getting to see Ricky, just Ricky, my son. And, you know, it ain't pretty. I'm not wearing any makeup. I'm not, you know, I'm not in a makeup and hair chair before we start the show. Neither one of us are.
Right.
You know, we wake up at 4:30 in the morning in our 4x4, and, I mean, you know, we trash the car just getting to places. And, by the way, it's like a bus and truck tour. We're taking people to document this with us, and that's it. I mean, it's no bells and no whistles. And so I get to be just a person, and Gertman's just who he is, and everything you see is real.
See, I was going to ask you about that, too, because I watched you this afternoon on the Fox Strategy Room, and I thought that was really cool that your mom said that. And I wanted to ask you how good it feels for you, because you are an actor, to be able to just go and do something real, not scripted, and be yourself and have such a passion for it other than the scripted world of acting.
It's a bevy of things come up in my mind when you say that. First of all, as an actor, it's the greatest. I think maybe the only thing that would be greater is being a rock star. And, of course, rock stars really want to act, so it's funny in itself. But, you know, and for, as an actor, and whether it's nighttime, daytime, Saturday morning, you know, I'm going to climb inside a character and give it all I got. But at the same time, you get to hide behind that character. I've often sat there, and I've got a stethoscope around my neck and scrubs on, and I'm doing my show, and I'm like, isn't it funny? All the hours that I put into this, I could have actually maybe become a doctor, you know? Or if I was a detective on my last show, I'm like, well, damn, had I really given it the time, I could have gone to the police academy and Quantico, and I could have done all the things I talk about. One time I was, and by the way, that character was also a lawyer, and when I'm pleading my case in front of the lawyer in some in the same show, and we're on a 5-minute break, and I look up at the judge who's acting as the judge. I'm looking at the DA who's acting like the DA. I'm even looking at the criminals who are acting like criminals, and I'm acting like a lawyer. And I just said, look at us all. This is really funny. Like, we couldn't really go out and really do this. We had to just pretend. We're still playing pretend, you know?
Exactly.
You know? And I have to tell you this. I was operating once on my brother, Michael Knight, operating. Yeah. You know, Jake Martin is a hotshot rogue, renegade doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
We had this big dish on his stomach, and the canvas. Canvases are over. It's just like Grey's Anatomy, except they have, you know, they have 10 days to shoot one episode, and we have 1 day to shoot one episode. In fact, I just want to segue for a minute. When they did the live episode of ER several years ago, and it was directed, I think, by Quentin Tarantino, that episode didn't come out that hot, if you remember. You know,
I saw that. Yes, I remember that.
You know, it was like, damn, it kind of looked like, you know, like they're flying like out of a cannon, which we have to do on a daily basis. So I really have to take my hat off to all my co-stars and the producers and the crew on shows like mine that work, you know, at such a feverish pace. I just want to tell you this: I'm operating on my brother, and I'm really intense into it, you know, and I really want everything to seem authentic. I go, that's the one thing I won't mess with is the dialogue about, you know, hospital jargon and doctor jargon. In fact, I want to get so familiar with that I can be really flip with it and throw it out like some of the best doctors in the world. That's my thing. But my mother calls me up and she goes, so I saw the surgery today. I'm like, yeah, Ma. She's like, yeah, well, it kind of looked like you were, you know, eating a bowl of spaghetti and you were digging around for meatballs. I'm like, thanks, Ma.
That is so funny.
She's always been
only
like
moms.
That.
Only moms can do that to us.
At least on Seeing Versus Believing, my mom was like, yeah, you know, I really got to see Ricky. And
that's
fabulous. That meant a lot.
Now, since we're talking a little bit about the soap, how do the cast members feel about the show? And do you think you have more believers on the show now or skeptics on the set?
I think that actors on a whole mostly are more sort of they've got an ethereal thing about them, or they've got an outgoing thing about them, or a gregarious thing, or precocious thing, or, you know, and I think they are just always, as a breed, I believe actors are more open to this kind of thing. They wear their emotions, most of them, on their sleeve, and they're, you know, we're easily accessible with our emotions. So I've got to say, my guess would be, and of course Jeff Gertman, my skeptic friend, would probably disagree, but I've got to say on a whole, actors are believers for the most part.
Okay. Well, I'm curious about Michael Knight. I'd probably say more than others because he is a cut-up on camera and off. I was able to spend quite a bit of time with him last year, and he's just a funny guy, period. And I kind of see him as possibly being a skeptic. Do you think or no?
I know that Michael loves sci-fi. And he's a real movie buff. In fact, there's a real genius to Michael Knight.
Yeah.
A real genius. That's why I love working with him. We just start to fly. We use the script as basically a blueprint, and then we just kind of take off. And, you know, a lot of times it works, and sometimes, I got to tell you, sometimes it doesn't. And that, you know, those is when we stop and regroup and do it again. But, I got to think, I would say right now I'd put $100 down that Michael Knight is a believer.
Okay, that's cool to know, too, because he seems, to people who've never met him or just see him on the soap, they see him for the cut-up and the funny guy and the serious guy. But so I went on that Rock the Soap cruise with them last year, and I got to hang out with him when he had a few, when he was a few sheets to the wind, I should say, and he was just the funniest person, and I kind of took him as a skeptic, so that's good to see. I'm not on my game. I couldn't
all,
pick that out of the bag.
We've all done it, and you know, been a few sheets to the wind. The thing is with Michael, and for anybody out there that doesn't know Michael Knight, he's Tad the Cat on All My Children for years, and a real icon of daytime. Without becoming a caricature of himself, he has got a brilliance about him. And he was one of the major guys, I think, that has deconstructed daytime and just brings it. Michael could be on any show right now, and he would be compelling. Mm-hmm. Any nighttime
show,
he could be on Brothers and Sisters, could be on anything, you know, and he would be compelling, and I would watch it.
I completely agree with you.
He gets really, really emotional on set, and when we cross that little stage line and we're on a set, I really feel like we're in our home, in the Martin home. You know, I really do. And I really do feel like we're brothers. I've known him. I knew him before I ever stepped foot on All My Children.
Right.
And which, by the way, I've just started my third season of. Didn't just start the second. You're my third. Can you believe it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is the third. Did I say second? I did say second. Okay.
Second under my belt. And that's true. The second just came to a close and started the third. And I don't even know where the time went.
Well, you know what? As far as All My Children goes, I mean, you were just and we spoke about this on Buzzworthy, but my listeners didn't hear me say this, and I will say that you're a breath of fresh air on the show, and not taking away from any of the other people who played Jake, but there you bring something different than the other guys had, and right now, I couldn't imagine another recast of Jake. You know what I mean? You're just Jake, and you do Jake so well, and you do it so well in your own way that it just couldn't be replaced. So
that's the ultimate compliment. I do appreciate that, you know. I really do. No. As far as I was concerned, I just love that it was a family member. I know how these shows work, and I never saw Jake on that show. I wasn't familiar. So I had no preconceived notions in any form or capacity. And I knew he was off the canvas for half a decade. So, and also he was coming back from a war-torn situation, which changes most people. So, you know, can't help
it
if he came back a little shorter and cuter. I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
Well, you know what? You're just as adorable as any Jake that's been there, and you are Jake.
I know they were all stud muffins. I can't hold a candle. But
hush now. Hush it. Ricky, don't make me double ghetto on you. You got your thing going on in there, and you're quite the adorable one. So.
Oh, you're very sweet. Well, I do know this. I think I've added a layer of scruff to the show that they weren't really necessarily wanting or needing. You know, because if I remember when I was younger, when that show was on, it was always a very clean-looking, very serious show, you know? And,
yeah, no, it's changed.
I've been trying to personally trying to destroy that single-handedly.
Well, you know what? You do such a fabulous job on it, and you really have such an incredible fan base that followed you from Guiding Light and As the World Turns. So, and that's got to be probably the ultimate compliment as an actor, to know that, you know, soap fans are so damn loyal. They'll go anywhere that you go. So with not just on watching you from soap to soap, but especially with this show, Seeing Versus Believing, which everyone you know and I put in the chat room, airs May 2nd at 8 and 11 p.m. Eastern Time on TLC. Check your local listings for the channel. But they're going to follow you there too, whether they believe or not, because, and I said this to you on the other show, I can go both ways as far as, you know, some things I might believe in, some things I won't. But because I watch you every day, I am more apt to believe that you're not bullshitting me. You know what I'm saying? And I know that you are the real deal. And I think that's going to come across to the people that watch the show.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's very intuitive of you, because I would not lead my people astray. And whether I've got two people that follow me or 22 million people that would follow
right.
me, I wouldn't do that. And we have something, I've said this a few times, and it's funny because I haven't said this in a long time, but we had something in my family called Your Honor, On Your Honor. And my father taught me this. That if you say On My Honor, you better mean it. It could be anything. I lost my lunch money today. Did you lose it, or did you, you know, gamble it away in a in a little card game with your friends? No, I lost it. On My Honor. Oh, On Your Honor, it must be true. So On My Honor, I want to do this show. I need to do this show because of a personal reason that I've got going with my dad. But I also want to do the show because I really do want people to experience it, and I want to capture things on camera that haven't been caught before. It's not enough for me on the ghost hunting shows around the world that, you know, they film it at 4 o'clock, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, and you hear something rattle and you see an orb of a little piece of light or that doesn't look like it fits. It's just not satisfying enough for me. It doesn't fill me up. It doesn't quench my hunger for knowledge and especially in this paranormal world that we live in, you know. And I'm famous for saying that there's a lot more out there in this world. I am not such I don't have such an ego that I think that we as humans are the only ones here or that nothing happens to us. I can go on and on about this, but I'm going to edit myself after I say, you know, the Swedes did an experiment on weighing people that were terminally ill, had days to live, moments to live, hours to live, seconds to live. And they weighed all of those human beings, and they all lost the same exact amount of weight at death. You know, 0.00001284 6. You know, and they said that what they were documenting was the weight of the soul, that this left your body. And so I personally believe that. I don't expect everybody else to believe that, but it's things like that. And I'm not, you know, I don't know how we got here. I don't know, you know, all the things that we don't understand, we try to understand. We make a creator, or we have our religions that we believe in, and our God that we adore, you know, or we base something off science. Whatever your thing is, I just personally believe that there's more out there, and that there's something. There's, you know, I have felt watched by family members, looked out for. You know, I've got a ton of examples that have happened in my personal life, but it's not all about me. I want the viewer at home with Seeing Versus Believing. I want them to experience it themselves. And I don't want to stop until we capture that.
I think that you're definitely going to do that. I've had a few experiences in my lifetime also, but I'd like to see other people's and hear about other people's also. I have a question from the chat room. This is Carrie. She wants to know if it's difficult for you to do this new show while taping all my children. Has AMC given him some time off to do this new show?
Well, you know, they're very, very good to me over at ABC, and I wouldn't be the first one to do double duty,
right?
To run across town or run across the country to do more. You know, this is what I do. I don't know anything different. If the show turns into a series, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. I love my first show too, though, and I love my all my children family. And I love what I do. In fact, I don't know, I'd be pulling the hair out of my head if I wasn't doing what I do. So I'm just going to be doing a lot more of it, you know, schedule-wise.
Right. Give me an example of something that happened to you.
When I was about 7 years old, my father was doing a world tour, and they'd rented a house, and we always had a lot of people around us. We had a band that I got to tell you something. Rolling Stones opened for my father.
Wow.
And, at this point, this was some different band. I don't know who they were. I was just a kid. But by the way, my father, you know, you've heard of the Hell's Angels. My father was doing a show in Haight-Ashbury up in San Francisco, and all the Hell's Angels walked in, and my mother thought, "We're going to be killed tonight, Paul," she said to my father, Golden. And instead, my father brought up some of the toughest people, some of the toughest men in the world, and brought them up on stage and made them look like idiots, you know, to each other until he broke them down. And do you know that when they left, the head of the Hell's Angels at the time was a guy named Chocolate, gave my father his business card and said, "We will do and we will be there any time for you that you need us, ever." Mm-hmm. I mean, there was that kind of thing. My father moved people incredibly. So one time when I was 7 years old, they had rented a house, and I had the attic was my loft, kind of cool room, and I was a little boy. I dug it. I loved it. And the house was very scary. It was it was like an old monastery, right? My father lived very grand, by the way. And at seven, in the middle of the night, there was another bed next to me, and I heard, you know, the snoring in the bed, and I could see a figure in the bed. And I thought, well, it must be one of the members of the, you know, this band that opened for my dad, because he was very generous and he let people stay with us and all this. And I said, I don't remember the guy's name, was Oliver or something, in the band. And I said, "Oliver," and it stopped. This thing, this what I thought was Oliver, stopped snoring and rolled over, and looked at me, and sat up at the foot of the bed. And I said his name again and again, and now he didn't answer me. Now, when a little boy doesn't get answered up in a room that's like a lofty kind of attic situation, I started to panic, and I got up, and I went over to him, and this thing, the room kind of went blue, and this thing disappeared, and I got so terrified, I ran to go get a light, and I fell all the way down the staircase, and I got all beaten up and bloodied, and I ran out of the house, and I had a nanny or something, God knows where she was sleeping or something, and I sat up in the living room until my parents came home, freaked out beyond belief, and there's no way to this day, I remember every single moment, if it was a frame by frame in my mind to this day, you know, till I'm a grown man. And it was very real, and there was nobody in the house. And that Oliver and all those other people came home with my father like an hour later.
Wow.
And I've got several of those. It was if those types of things that were attracted to me when I was younger. And as I've said a couple of places on this sort of junket that I've been doing for the show that my father told me I was a receiver, and I had shut it off when I was about 12 years old or around that time. And he said to me, I want you to revisit that after I'm gone. I want you to revisit that. And I'm really still trying to figure out exactly what he meant with those words. But I think that by doing this show, I'm revisiting that.
Right. It's a receiver to me. When I heard you say that a couple of times, because I've been keeping up with the places that you've been to, trying to ask questions so you don't seem bored with, you know, having to keep repeating yourself. When you say receiver, to me that automatically that pops in my head is like John Edwards. You know,
yeah, I love John Edwards, by the way.
So do I.
Yeah, I love John Edwards. And John Edwards is doing something very real.
Right.
And the way that, you know, because he doesn't have plants in the audience, he rolls into any town, and he doesn't know their backstory. And I know all the tricks. You can read the newspaper and read obituaries, you know, and you can do all kinds of tricks. But we plan to have John Edwards on at some point. My father did the same thing. He could roll into any city in the world. Strangers coming into the audience, and he would, it's a long story to explain how he would, what he would do to this audience, one man holding court for 3 hours, but he had this power over this room, the way that John Edwards does. And so, yeah, I think of receiver in a way, that way as well, but I'll tell you, I don't quite know what it is yet. I'm just being really honest about that.
Now, with John Edwards, I have a cousin who one of her best friends lost her brother in a motorcycle accident, and she happened to go to one of his shows out in Long Island, and he picked her right out, and he told her story. So because I knew that person, it made me a believer. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like going back to what I was saying about you. Because he knew so much about her life and her brother and his accident made me almost an instantaneous believer.
Well, this is what I'm saying, and it's because it's somebody that you trust in, and I'm not going to bullshit anybody that's been, you know, new fan, old fan, viewer, fan, you know. I've always called people that have liked anything that I do my extended friends and family. I'm not going to do that. I've been on the planet for too long, and I've been too far down the road to try to create some rubbish. I'm just after the truth. I've got a personal reason why I want to do it, and that's what's motivated me, you know.
Right. Well, we have a couple people on the phone for you that we'll touch real quick. We have area code 321. This is Stephanie. Stephanie, say hi to Ricky.
Hi, Ricky.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for calling in. That's cool. Thank you.
Well, it's great to get to talk to you, and I've been watching you for years, and I really, like Joanne said, I love what you've done with the character of Jake on All My Children.
Thank you. It means the world to me.
Well, I appreciate you doing all the hard work for us to be able to watch every day. And I'm really looking forward to watching your new show on Sunday night. And I just I had a question for you. I was wondering how you feel that believing in the paranormal has impacted or helped your acting career in any way throughout the years.
That's a great question. I think that just being an open person really helps when you are working on scenes with other people. You can see the level at what they that they want to attack, let's say the material, and I watch them on multi levels, and I try to close. If I'm ever rehearsing with anybody, I close my eyes, and I listen to them instead of acting. I never want to be caught acting. I'd rather react, you know. And so I think that by being a believer in and thinking that there's something more than just us out there, besides all my personal experiences that I've had, and that one that I said before, I've got tons of them, and I'm so thankful that I've had them, because that makes me a little clearer, at least in my mind. I think that it just has me, maybe I'm just more of an open person, and I'd like to do a scene or attack a role, and I could do it 50 different ways. I don't think that there's one right way to do it. It's whatever, you know. I just like to think I'm more of an open human being, that I'm not closed off, that I'm not sort of myopic in my thinking or stubborn or, you know, stiff or straight. Maybe I'm not saying it in the best, you know,
No, no, I understand that. That's really interesting.
Way,
that makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's great. That really makes sense. Well, I can't wait to see your show Sunday night, and I love watching you on All My Children, so thanks for taking my
thank
call.
Thank you. And I'll tell you what, this is for everybody out there. If you've got something that's creepy or somebody that that is one of these types of people that has a claim or you know, or has a talent or a gift or a phenomenon or anything, I want, you know, I'm really hoping that they write in to us. This world is amazing now with Twitter and Facebook, and
mm-hmm.
you know, write to us or TLC, which you don't have to, you know, you don't have to write a letter and put a stamp on it. You can just press a couple of, you know, keys on the keyboard, and
mm-hmm.
let us know, because we're stockpiling those, and we really hope we get a chance to bring all of those to you, you know, once a week.
That would be awesome.
Well,
thank
you,
Stephanie.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, love.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. Yes, and I put some links for everybody in the chat room. We have seeingversusbelieving.com. We have paulgolden.com. The Colorgenics test is in the chat room. I'd love to hear everybody talk about that, because I know mine was so spot on, and that I purchased the 3 months because I want to follow it and see where it leads. And on those websites, there is some really cool tools that Ricky was talking about earlier, some MP3 downloads of your dad's stuff to stop smoking, lose weight, a bunch of stuff I was looking at. There's so many cool things on these websites that I want everybody to take a look at and check out. This next person is Ricky. His name is Tony, and he's calling from Chicago.
Cool.
Tony,
hey.
Say hi to Ricky.
Hey, Ricky, what's going on, buddy?
Tony, what's up, Tony?
Not much, man. Not much. Just come in, just say, so come and say hello, and I'm telling you what you're doing. It's a great job on All My Children, keeping it rolling, keeping it smoothing, and especially, and I love my Jamanda when you're working with the beautiful Chriselle Stoss.
Yeah, she's something else, isn't she? She's awesome. Yeah, we laugh our asses off. Can I just tell you what? She's like a big goofball. I mean, she's gorgeous, but she's a big goofball, and that's why she's got a sense of humor, and that's the best part of her.
Yeah, I know that's right. Hey, listen, I want to talk about the show real quickly. You know that we all know that Janet is now back in town. And you know Jake does not know about it yet, but when he does find out, how is he going to protect Amanda?
That's a great question. I don't think that Jake really knows what Janet's what Janet is capable of. But I'm always like, it's so funny. Like I always, whenever any stuff comes up about the show, I always like to tell. I like to tell what's happening, and I never want to get in trouble because I do have a big mouth. All I can tell you is obviously Janet's going to turn the town on its head for a while, and Jake has never dealt with anything like this. But you know how much he loves his girl, and I can tell you this. Janet does not want Jake in the picture. And she doesn't have an edit button.
That'll not be good. That'll be good.
No, and she's awesome. Kate, who plays Janet, she really commits. She should be committed, actually, because she commits really well to her role. And that was a lot of fun for me. A lot of fun for me to play in the same arena with her. She's awesome.
Yeah, and by the way, Kate lives here in Chicago. By the way, she makes her home here in Chicago.
Yeah, totally. She flies in, and she's just a very giving actress, though, and really wants to work on the material, which I'm a huge fan of.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing in the chat room. They're saying, "I hope Jake doesn't end up in a freezer."
Oh no, we don't need that now. We don't want that.
When you've got dialogue like that, you're like, "Listen, it's not you. She put your father in a freezer."
Oh no!
Oh my gosh!
So you've got to try to do that with, you know, You know, the, you know, you've got to do that with conviction.
That'll be a new reason for frozen food, and that's not good. No, no, we don't want that.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Tony.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, Ricky. Continue to success on to all my children, and good luck with your new show on TLC. And I hope I'll be watching sometime. Well, maybe I'll be watching this weekend, but I'll probably watch on demand sometime.
Well, you know that's right. So if you can't, I know you know how TLC is, and they repeat everything. They repeat it a bunch of times. But if you can't watch it on Sunday night at what time is it on?
8 o'clock. 8 p.m. Eastern, and then again at 11.
VR
right.
You something, Tony.
Yeah,
thanks, Tony.
All right,
okay, guys. Have a good weekend.
Oh,
take care.
Okay, you too. Yeah, that's funny. Hope he doesn't end up in a freezer. We don't want Jake in a freezer. This last caller, though, Ricky, is Linda from Coral Springs, Florida. Linda, say hi to Ricky.
Hi, Ricky. How are you?
Hello, Linda. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll see. We'll see what happens, but it's been a great experience thus far.
Well, I'm going to round up as many people as I know to make sure that they watch your show, because I had seen the preview, and I was so excited about the show. I had no idea that you were even involved with it until later, so I was already planning on watching it, so now I've just got to round up as many people as I know to tune in. So it will be good. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much. You know what's funny is TLC, A&E, History, even NBC, CBS, whatever, they all listen to us. Like, they listen to what people care about and what they're watching or what their vibe is. So I can't thank everybody enough for what they've been doing. It just started to happen. People writing in and writing into TLC. TLC started playing the clips on their YouTube channel and tweeting about it. I didn't even know that the network tweeted. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. Very cool. And I think it's Sunday night. It's 8 o'clock. It's perfect. It's a great time. It's not like it's coming on at 11 o'clock. So it's.
I think it's their creepy night and their scary night, or that's what they're building their Sunday nights for. Because I think the show on before it is either I Shouldn't Be Alive or I Should Be Dead. It's called something like
that.
I caught one episode of that. Car wreck. I can't turn it off. I can't turn the thing off.
I
late for dinner. And then I think the series premiere of Hoarders, which is also
good.
I hate myself that I can't stop watching these things. But you know what I like about that show? I actually knew a hoarder when I was a kid, and I wished I wished people came in and helped her. And she was a multimillionaire, by the way. But she had this is an affliction, a disease. So,
It is. It's unbelievable. I'm in the property management business, and it's so sad because I've seen apartments, and not only are there apartments, you can't even walk through them, but then they rent storage closets and garages, and those places are just as bad of shape as their apartment that they live in. It's so sad.
It's very sad, and at least the beautiful part of that, again, it's human interest piece. It's like a documentary every one of those episodes, and they are really trying to help those folks. So I dig it, and I take my hat off to you for that.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you something else, by the way, about our show, about Seeing Versus Believing. We have the production company that I teamed up with. There was a show that I liked called Pawn Star on History Channel, and I just thought it was so clever. Besides the name being cool, it's about a pawn shop in Las Vegas, and every piece of thing that comes in there, front door, you learn about whether it's a pocket watch or a hot air balloon that they purchased and taken from somebody and going to resell or fix it up or whatever. I love the way that show was cut, and it didn't take itself so seriously, yet you learned a lot. I just really dug it. So would you believe that I tracked those people down? And they were a bunch of young guys right in New York City, and that's the people who I partnered with on Seeing Versus Believing.
Wow.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And by the way, that's not, I didn't just get, you know, they had to like the concept as well. They had to fall in love with it. They had to be willing to take the ride with me. And so my hat goes off to Left Field. It's actually Left Field Pictures. I mean, they're just young and hungry and aggressive. They're not afraid to get into the trenches, you know, and do it. And we traipsed all over this freaking country to do this, to bring you the first installment, which what we hope is the first of many. But for the one-hour event, and these guys were, you know, so I'm giving them a shout-out.
Wow. Well, good for you, Ricky. And I think it's going to be great. And I do have a question before I let you go. Where was this place, I think you said it was Hell's Acre?
Yeah.
Where is it, in the Midwest somewhere, but what state?
Well, so you don't want to move there. It's in
I know.
It's in Arkansas. It's in Arkansas.
Really?
Which actually is a pretty state. But it's in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and it's an area in our beautiful country that's considered sacred, believe it or not, even though that piece of land there is cursed. But it was never claimed by any of the American Indian tribes because the tribes would go there and enjoy these natural springs, so they wouldn't fight there. It was a very spiritual place, and no one tribe would claim that land because that's not how they rolled. They would claim this territory or that. But when it came to the hot springs, they called it the breath of God coming out of the earth, and it fed crops, and it fed their animals, and they wouldn't fight there. However, there was this outcropping of stones in the middle of a forest there, that those rocks were not indigenous to that land at all. And thousands of years later, here we are, and people are going, well, maybe the American Indians used it to make tools. That's why these rocks are all cut up the way they are. Not true, because we went and spoke to the American Indians. Maybe it was an Indian burial ground, that's why it's spooky. Not true. We went and documented that and found out that that's not the case. Maybe it was this, maybe it was that. But the American Indians, like, these caves were built way before they ever showed up. And that's what's not. That's what we don't understand. You know,
no one really knows where the rocks came from because they're
exactly
not from that area.
That's right. Huh. And there's a lot of, it's just a freaky, scary, scary place. And by the way, I've given that particular segment a lot of airtime. There's another segment that really, really taught me a lot about a human emotion. And there's a piece that we did on a kid that claimed he was ripped out of his home. He was lying on the couch watching TV and sucked out the front door. And thrown thousands of feet by a F3 tornado, and lived to talk about it. And are there witnesses? Were there witnesses? Is it possible? Is he full of crap? You know. And then follow this kid's journey and see if it's possible. All I can tell you is, since we have left and since we did this piece, the Guinness Book of World Records is investigating this kid, and you know, he might make it into the book next year. So,
wow.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a pretty cool thing.
That is pretty cool.
Awesome.
They're saying in the chat room that the show is basically Mythbusters meets X-Files.
Yeah, kind of, you know. Kind of. Like Mythbusters, exactly, meets Paranormal State. You know, someone calls us up in there and their house, they've got a demon. Well, we're going to show up, and we're not going to just go, yes, your house definitely has a demon. We're going to do something about it. We're going to go, they're going to say, well, show us the demon.
Yeah, prove it.
You know, prove it. And not just, like, cocky, because you know where I come from, where my, you know, but I'm not alone. I've got a whole team with me that have to be appeased as well.
Tammy Christ in the chat room, her phone call I didn't get to, she's wondering if you think there's a difference in believing in paranormal activity versus believing in ghosts.
Well, I think that a lot of what the paranormal activity that any of us might have witnessed, or our uncle or our aunt or our brother or our cousin, our spirits, our you know what's funny? I did a show, Another World, a long time ago, when I was a punk kid in Brooklyn, that building that we were in was haunted off its face. I mean, it was out of control how haunted this place was. In fact, there was an old man that worked there who was 90 years old, and he'd been there since the time they had done these Esther Williams movies, Esther Williams, the swimmer, his swimming movies, right, when they were popular, which was like the year of One or something. But he'd been there from the beginning, and he was. They kept him on. They kept him on. He had a much bigger executive job, and then over the years, you know, there was less need for him or whatever, and then he stayed on as a maintenance man. He told me so many stories, and I told him something that happened to me, and he's like, "Sure, that's Williford. You know, he's been around for a long time, and you know, I mean, it's just kind of crazy and creepy. But this place was so ridiculously haunted that is that paranormal activity. The reason why I bring that up is because that building was filled with actors, right? And actors have big personalities, and they want to be heard, and they want attention, and they want, you know, for the most part. And I think when some of them die, they don't want to be gone. They don't want to stop doing what they were doing. I think a lot of those people were still showing up for work, you know, even though they were dead for 100 years. You know?
Right.
Yeah, they showed up with their scripts in their hand. I'm ready.
Oh, my God. If you had another hour, I'd go into telling you some really cool stories.
Listen, I have all the time in the world. If you have another hour, you could keep talking as long as you want. Listen. I'm here for you, buddy. This show is all about you and your experiences. So you talk
amazing.
About what you want to talk about. This is all you, honey. All you. And I have to say that you always have an open invitation to come back. And the people in the chat room are saying that after the episode airs and you get a few episodes that air and we start seeing the fan responses, I would love for you to come back and bring some people back to discuss the things that went on and what we saw and stuff like that. And
I would love that. Absolutely.
Other people's experience.
My promise to you and just out there to our world, I guess that I will bring on guests to chat shows and radio shows that have really impressed me or impressed us all as a group. And us as the producers and the show, and show them to the world, you know, and show them doing their thing, and we'll have experts there right there as well, and what they can. I'll bring in geologists or physicists or people from NASA, whatever we need to do.
We got to get your skeptics buddy to come on next time with you, so we can get his input on it also.
You know, when our world was wrecked up at Hell's Half Acre in Arkansas, I got on the phone and I called one of my peeps, who is a guy named Chip Coffey, who you know him from Paranormal State and Psychic Kids. He's my friend, and he was like, "Don't worry, we're gonna get this under control." He's building these kits of metals for all of us to travel with to wear around our neck.
Wow.
He was very, and he wasn't joking. He's really serious about it. And I got to tell you, for whatever it's worth, with all those medals at St. Benedict, St. Michael, St. Christopher, all those medals together, for some reason, that's going to make me. I'm going to feel better with that. I won't lie. You know.
Well, I have to say that this has been probably one of the most entertaining shows I've had. You know what? I have to say, I do a lot of shows with soap stars. I've done many with Michael. I've done, just the other day, I did one with Denise Vassy, who, by the way, saw your first show. She told me she got a sneak peek, and she said how awesome it was. So she told me to give you a little shout-out when you came on today. And Catherine Hickland, who I know you know, she sent me a text message telling me that she couldn't, I asked her to come on to talk to you tonight. I was going to kind of like surprise you a little bit because she does the hypnotherapy and all that stuff, and she's out in Vegas now. She sent me a text that she wasn't able to, but she did say to relay a message to you that she is so damn proud of you and wishes you nothing but success, and she can't wait to watch the show.
She's really connected. Spiritually, and she knows herself very well. I really like that. I really like that about her.
I'm really
very fond of her.
She's a dear friend, and I love her to death. So I was hoping to kind of get her on the phone also.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I love doing that. But I love having you guys come on that have the other projects, and we focus on those because what I love to get across to the fans, because there is a big soap fan following with this show, that you guys are not just the characters they see on TV. You have so many more interests and things that you do, and they're so interesting, and I'm glad we focused so much on this show that's coming on May 2nd, and I really hope that everyone gathers their friends, have a little party, you know, do a little Ricky Tour Golden party on Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and, you know, throw back a couple and, you know, scare yourself to death, piss your pants, do something, and show the guys some support. You know, that's what I want to see, and that's what I hope to get out of you being on the show. I know you'll get it from me.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been really, I've just been a little overwhelmed with all the support and all the emails and stuff. So it's cool. It's just definitely going to be a fun ride. So I want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart.
Well, you know, the girls in the chat room want to know if it's a good idea for them to post some experiences on your Facebook page so they can
I find that very entertaining, and I read every single one of them.
Okay. All right, good. Girls, post your stuff. Girls and guys, I should say. Post your experiences on Ricky's Facebook page. All the links are available to you. I posted everything, and if you need something, let me know, and I'll get it to you. You know, the last thing I have to ask you is if you would be interested in doing a small promo for Stardish Radio before I let you go.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
Just as long as you say Stardish Radio and Ricky Paul Golden, you could say whatever else you want.
All right, let's do it.
Whenever you're ready. Yep.
I'll do you a couple. This is Ricky Paul Golden, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. There's one.
Okay.
This is Ricky Paul Golden, and I want to thank Stardish Radio for letting me talk my face off.
Love it. Listen, you are the best, and like I said, open invitation, and we will definitely stay in touch. And everyone, please, please, please tune into TLC. Check your local listings, 8 p.m. May 2nd, for the awesome Ricky Paul Golden and his buddy. What's his first name again? I'm sorry. Rick?
Gertman. Mr. Jeff Gertman.
Okay. And on 8 p.m. Eastern Time, check your local listing for the actual channel. And until then, you guys have a wonderful night, everybody. Ricky, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Now, thank you. All my love. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. Okay, thank you. Good night.
Hi, this is Aiden Turner on Stardish Radio.